Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 6th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Report, Trump Endorses Sparks. Midland's Kevin Sparks is running for a seat in the Texas Senate. By Stuart Doreen. Former President Donald Trump has endorsed Midland's Kevin Sparks for a seat in the Texas Senate, according to a tweet from Texas Tribune's Patrick Svitek. It is likely that Sparks will be competing for the Republican nomination in a district that includes Midland, Odessa, and Amarillo. That district is expected to be comparable to the makeup of the current district, Texas Senate District 31. The current office holder is Kel Seliger, a Republican from Amarillo. In the endorsement of Kevin Sparks, Trump states, quote, Kevin Sparks of the great state of Texas is running against Rhino, Texas Senator Kel Seliger, who is not helpful to our great MAGA movement and in fact seems like the Texas version of Mitt Romney, and that's not good. Kevin is a businessman, loves the people of Midland and West Texas, must win in order to protect our oil and gas workers, defend our southern border, our military, and our vets, and fight for our America First policies. Kevin Sparks has my complete and total endorsement. Unquote. Sparks and Stormy Bradley of Big Spring have announced their intention to run for a state Senate seat. A primary is expected to take place in the spring, and the general election will take place in November 2022. Seliger has not announced his intentions. Trump has a record of endorsing prior to primary elections in West Texas. While president, he endorsed August Pfluger in the Republican primary for the District 11 congressional seat. The reported endorsement of Sparks happened less than a week after Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was in Midland, stating the need for a state senator that was in the oil and gas industry. Trump has endorsed Patrick for lieutenant governor in 2022. This article is entitled, Pool Shows Funding Prowess. Candidate in City Council Race Raises the Most Cash, by Stuart Doreen. Robin Pool can raise money. The candidate for one of our two at-large seats on the Midland City Council was the lone candidate to report having raised more than $40,000 during the most recent campaign finance period. In reports that were due Monday, Poole showed she had raised $40,525. That was good enough to give her a $3,000 plus advantage over incumbent Spencer Robnett, who raised $37,325. Dan Corrales was third with $16,650. Incumbent Michael Trost and Dustin Johnston rounded out the field of five with $6,325 and $20 respectively. The five will be the at-large candidates in the November 2nd election. In that election, eligible Midland voters will have the opportunity to vote for their two favorites. The two candidates with the most votes win seats on the Midland City Council. Early voting for the election begins October 18th. Campaign finance reports also showed Scott Dufford having an advantage over his District 1 rival. Dufford, an incumbent, raised $16,400 during the period. Ross Schumann raised $1,186. Poole has shown the ability to raise funds previously, when she ran to represent Central Midland, District 3, in 2019, she led all candidates with $45,364 raised, according to the January 2020 filing report. In terms of money spent, that was a different story. Corrales has spent nearly more than the rest of the at-large and District 1 fields combined. His $37,057 was easily more than Poole's $16,174. Trost reported spending $14,786 and Robnett just short of $4,000, $3,895. Robnett is in the most advantageous position, having the most money left over going into the last month of the election, $37,789.09. Poole still showed having $24,611 in cash available. In the District 1 race, Schumann has outspent Dufford, $4,471 to $2,996. Dufford, though, reported having around $10,000 more cash on hand going into the final weeks of the campaign. He showed more than $13,400 left. Those offering campaign cash included former mayors Ernie Angelo and Wes Perry. Angelo gave to Corrales, and Perry gave to Corrales, Poole, Robnett, and Dufford. Former councilmen giving $250 or more included J. Ross Lacey, Poole, and Lee Wood, Dufford. Other notables donating included ConocoPhillips' Tin Leach, Robnett, and Dufford, ChinaAid's Bob Fu, Poole, Midland College Representative Adrian Carrasco, Corrales, and Poole, and Crown Quest's Tim Dunn, Poole. The largest donation to one candidate was $10,000 from Javed Anwar to Robin Poole. This article is entitled "Artist Opens Printmaking Studio for Creators to Use." Cheese Factory Press to have grand opening on Friday, by J.C. Lewis. A local artist is opening his own printmaking studio that artists can rent out. The business, Cheese Factory Press, will be hosting a grand opening Friday for potential customers to check out the space. Midlander Andrew Lawson saw the opportunity to create a mutually beneficial space for the community and himself. This started from my own purposes, because my own professional practice needed a place to work out of, he said. Midland doesn't have a place that offers facilities for artists to do printmaking practices. Lawson said he wanted to kill two birds with one stone, creating a space for himself to work out of and allowing printmakers a place to create. The studio in Southwest Midland also will provide educational workshops to newcomers of the practice. Lawson received his master's in fine arts from Texas Tech University. He works a lot with intaglio artwork, etchings, and engravings, although he can do most artistic processes. Starting October 16th, the shop will have several workshops about how to create etchings and relief printing. Those wanting to participate in workshops don't need to have prior experience. Lawson would also like to feature lectures from artists, Midland Arts Council, and local museums in the space. He has also lived in Austin and Lubbock, which he said both have maker spaces for artists and hobbyists. Hours of operation are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday through Friday at 3241 Franklin Avenue, Suite A. This is the local page. This article is entitled "Midland Humane Coalition Acquires New Rescue Facility," by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Humane Coalition, MHC, has announced the acquisition of its new facility, the Joe and Van Mabee Animal Rescue Center, Mabee ARC. The new Mabee ARC will be operated by Midland Humane Coalition as an auxiliary facility to its PetSmart Enhanced Adoption Center. It will provide the much-needed space to prepare rescues for adoption. The expansion happened out of a need for sufficient space to quarantine, foster, rehabilitate, and allow rescues to recover from stress, surgery, or illness prior to placing them for adoption at the Enhanced Adoption Center. The 5,700-square-foot facility, standing on 2 acres, will be able to house up to 60 dogs and 20 cats temporarily as they undergo the vetting process. The Maybe ARC has been an ongoing project since the launch of a capital campaign in 2016, which yielded generous donations from Joe and Van Maybe, Javed and Vicky Anwar, several foundations, private donors, and a grant from Midland County. As a primary MHC donor and board member, the facility is named in honor of Joe and Van Maybe. MHC was initially slated to construct a larger-scale building located on undeveloped acreage in northeast Midland. However, with the opening of the City of Midland's new animal shelter, and after considering the infrastructure and construction costs, plus time required to build a brand new facility, the board determined a more viable option was to purchase a turnkey facility, the former Wagon Tail Pet Resort. That facility is nearly move-in ready and will enable MHC to get operations up and running in the least amount of time, while affording room to build and expand in the future. With minor renovations underway, MHC can utilize the facility to foster several rescues and projects. The official opening of the Joe and Van Maybe Animal Rescue Center will take place November 11th. This date also marks MHC's 10-year anniversary opening of its first facility, the PetSmart Enhanced Adoption Center. The Midland Humane Coalition is also hosting a masquerade funding ball October 30th at the Petroleum Club. The 10th annual Fur Ball will be a night to remember with wine, dinner, and music by West Texas Funk. Tickets are $150. This article is entitled Midland Planet Fitness to Celebrate Club Updates by J.C. Lewis. Planet Fitness is celebrating a recent remodel and the addition of new strength equipment during a welcome back event for members. On Monday, the all-day event will include raffle opportunities and gift bags with Planet Fitness swag for members and a radio remote. Members can also bring a guest for free and enjoy the club's amenities. The Midland Club remodel includes extended operating hours. New club hours give members access to a clean and spacious facility 24 hours a day, Monday through Thursday. Planet Fitness will close at 10 p.m. on Friday. Hours on Saturday and Sunday are 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. The Midland Club, which first opened in March 2013, is located at 1000 North Midkiff Road. Members will experience a new, clean, welcoming, non-intimidating environment with affordable membership options and access to high-quality, brand-name cardio and strength equipment, according to a press release. Additionally, members can take advantage of the 30-minute express workout, cardio theater, fully equipped locker rooms with day lockers and showers. The Classic membership is $10 per month and grants members unlimited access to the club and free Wi-Fi. The PF Black Card is $29.99 per month and grants members access to 2,000-plus Planet Fitness locations, the ability to bring a friend at any time, unlimited use of the hydro massage beds, massage chairs, tanning beds, and more. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, New Mexico Governor Thanks Oil, Cheers Hydrogen Plan, by Cedar Atanasio, Associated Press. Santa Fe, New Mexico. New Mexico's Democratic governor is seeking legislation to help jumpstart hydrogen production from natural gas in her state, a process that generates harmful greenhouse gases, but could one day be harnessed to provide environmental benefits. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham outlined the effort briefly at a convention of oil executives Monday in a speech that acknowledged the state's reliance on industry tax revenue while pledging to enforce pro-environment regulations. It's the latest tightrope walk for the governor, who has promised action on climate change while also working to shield the state's oil and gas producers from a federal drilling moratorium on public lands issued by fellow Democrat President Joe Biden. Lujan Grisham's first message to the executives was to put on their masks, citing her own emergency regulations issued weeks ago in response to the surge of the Delta variant of the coronavirus. She paused while some 300 attendees complied, before launching into a 20-minute speech thanking oil and gas producers for their contributions to the economy and tax revenues that form the backbone of state education funding. She pledged to kickstart the hydrogen fuel industry in New Mexico with legislation in February. "We are working on that as we speak," Lujan Grisham said, adding that it's part of an effort to turn New Mexico into a hydrogen fuel hub. The bill could include taxes and incentives for energy producers to produce hydrogen, legal frameworks to facilitate production and storage, refueling corridors for truck traffic, and training programs for workers in the industry. "The Hydrogen Hub Act will continue to help us reach our ambitious climate goal of decreasing greenhouse gas emissions by at least 45% by 2030, and boost our economy in the process," said New Mexico Environment Department spokeswoman Caitlin O'Brien. "Like electric car batteries, hydrogen fuel cells emit no carbon dioxide when used. But electric cars, like the growing number of hydrogen vehicles, including forklifts, are only as green as the energy used to power them. Most energy used to produce hydrogen currently comes from natural gas, according to the U.S. Department of Energy, and directly contributes to the pollution that causes. But supporters of the technology, including Biden, see it as a pathway to reducing carbon emissions as it becomes more environmentally safe. New Mexico's first large-scale hydrogen project describes itself as blue, harnessing natural gas to divide water to create hydrogen. A recent study by Cornell and Stanford found that the process generates 20% more carbon emissions than burning natural gas or coal for heat. In what could have been an applause line for an industry with few friends in the White House, Lujan Grisham said she's advocating for them at the highest level. "We continue to have conversations with the Biden administration to make sure that they understand the critical importance of this industry in our state," the governor said. But, like most of the speech, it was met with a silent buzz of ceiling lights and an occasional cough. In March, Lujan Grisham wrote Biden asking to exempt New Mexico from an executive order halting gas and oil production on federal land. She argued the move would push hydrocarbon mining to Texas, which shares a border above ground, and the oil-rich Permian Basin beneath it. But Lujan Grisham describes herself as a stakeholder of the industry, not necessarily a friend. She pledged to restrict methane emissions at drilling sites and continue enforcing regulations requiring use of fresh water and thorough cleanups of environmental spills. The speech made no mention of an oil spill currently coating the coast of California, or the record fires made worse this summer by global warming. Producers say methane rules will cost billions. The governor will have to walk another tightrope in February when pro-environment legislators from the state's growing progressive wing will have a chance to weigh in on the hydrogen legislation, and New Mexico oil and gas representatives will too. For many environmentalists, the governor's methane rules and support for hydrogen don't go far enough, fast enough to curb global warming. Student protesters have started to picket the governor's events and office. A handful of student climate activists blocked hotel doors after the governor left Monday's event. They sang and held a sign that read, "Whose side are you on?" Back in the convention hall, most of the oil and gas executives took off their masks immediately after the governor left. This article is entitled, "Oil Builds on Seven-Year High Amid Global Shortages," by Julia Fonseres, Bloomberg. Oil extended its rally from a seven-year high a day after OPEC Plus's decision to keep its supply agreement in place. As energy prices spike, stoking concerns that more petroleum products will be used in power generation. U.S. crude futures advanced 1.7% Tuesday, heading closer to the key psychological $80 a barrel level. At an OPEC Plus meeting on Monday, Saudi Arabia and its partners opted for only a modest output increase of 400,000 barrels a day for November. U.S. natural gas futures jumped to a 12-year high as global shortages of that fuel fanned fears of a shortage in the U.S. ahead of winter in the Northern Hemisphere. "There is no room for error in the system," said Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Futures Group, Inc. "If we get a cold winter, these prices could go up dramatically." Both the U.S. and global crude benchmarks have surged this month, with rising energy prices stoking fears of inflation, forcing consumers to pay more for everything, from gasoline to heating, food, and plastics. Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. forecast that power generation could add an extra 650,000 barrels a day to oil demand this winter due to high gas prices. Underlying oil market gauges are also showing signs of strength. West Texas Intermediate crude, so-called December Red December spread, a favored trade of the world's hedge funds, topped $7.50 a barrel this week, the strongest on a rolling basis since 2019. Meanwhile, in the U.S., analysts surveyed by Bloomberg estimate a crude stockpile rise of 700,000 barrels last week. The industry-funded American Petroleum Industry will release inventory data later Tuesday, while the U.S. government will release its weekly tally on Wednesday. This article is entitled, "United States Gas Climbs to Highest Close in 12 Years on Supply Tightness," by Josiana Joshua, Bloomberg. Natural gas futures jumped to the highest settlement price in 12 years in New York as global gas supply shortages stoke concerns for U.S. shortages. As the Northern Hemisphere heads into winter heating season, low U.S. auxiliary supplies have sparked concerns about potential shortages as demand for the furnace fuel ramps up. Gas futures rose 9.5% to close settle at $6.312 per million British thermal units on New York Mercantile Exchange, the highest close since December 2008. Traders and brokers are definitely considering that there's a high potential for the market to have to move into what we would call gas rationing pricing, which simply is that you basically have to preserve gas in your inventories to meet deliverability needs, said Nina Fahey, head of North American Natural Gas Analysis at research firm Energy Aspects Limited. Many are bracing for a brutally cold winter to deplete U.S. supply, despite mild weather forecasts for the winter season. The Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index soared to an all-time high on Monday as a global resurgence in demand for raw materials collides with supply constraints. The squeeze has been even more acute in Europe and Asia, where prices for gas and power soared to new all-time highs. In the UK, benchmark gas prices reached a fresh record Tuesday, jumping 23% to the equivalent of about $42. Gas production in U.S. fields, excluding Alaska, foundered around 91.2 billion cubic feet on Tuesday, the lowest since the beginning of September, according to Bloomberg NEF. Nationwide inventories held in storage to augment pipeline supplies during winter are 15% lower than a year ago, government figures showed. This is the State Page. This article is entitled, "U.S. Senate Bill Has Implications for New Mexico Nuclear Waste Projects," by Adrian Hedden, Carlsberg Current Argus. A bill introduced in the U.S. Senate this week could impact future nuclear projects in New Mexico, where a private company hopes to build a facility to store some of the most highly radioactive nuclear waste in the U.S. U.S. Senator Edward Markey, Democrat, Massachusetts, and Representative Mike Levin, Democrat, California, introduced the Nuclear Waste Task Force Act on September 28th, which would establish a task force tasked with studying amendments to the Atomic Energy Act of 1954 to remove environmental exceptions for nuclear waste, creating a consent-based program for siting facilities. If passed, and depending on the recommendations of the task force, this bill could prove a roadblock to projects like one proposed by Haltech International to build a temporary storage facility for spent nuclear fuel rods in southeast New Mexico. The project would hold up to 100,000 metric tons of the waste temporarily, while a permanent repository is developed. Such a final resting place for the waste does not exist in the U.S., as a site at Yucca Mountain, Nevada, was blocked by state lawmakers and defunded under the administration of former President Barack Obama. The Haltech project drew widespread opposition from New Mexico leaders, including Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, Attorney General Hector Balderas, and Commissioner of Public Lands Stephanie Garcia Richard. But the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, recommended earlier this year that a license be issued to Haltech despite state concerns, and recently issued a license to a facility in West Texas proposed by interim storage partners that was opposed by leaders in that state. If passed, the bill was intended to put more power into the hands of states, as current law does not require the federal government gain consent at that level when siting nuclear facilities. When it comes to the storage of nuclear waste, siting decisions must be rooted in geological science, not political science, Markey said. Enabling consent-based storage is the key to developing real, practical solutions for the long-term storage of nuclear waste. This nuclear waste task force will play a critical role in determining how to make that happen. And New Mexico does not consent to Haltech's proposal, said Don Hancock, nuclear waste program manager at Albuquerque-based watchdog group Southwest Research and Information Center. He said opposition from state leaders and public comments gathered during the NRC's licensing process showed the majority of New Mexicans were not in favor of the facility. If you look at the public comments, most of the people have opposed this. One of the flaws is the NRC said, "We don't care," Hancock said. NRC is correct when they say the law doesn't require them to get consent from a state to license these facilities. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, October 6th. Lois Wyatt Matajek. Lois Wyatt Matajek passed away peacefully at her home in Bedford, Texas on September 26th. She was born September 25th, 1931 in Carbon, Texas, to Lila and Ray Wyatt. She was preceded in death by her parents, two siblings, and her husband, Jerry Matajek. She is survived by two daughters, Sandra Hightower and husband Jack of Fort Worth, Brenda Smart and husband Steve of Coleyville. Her two sons, Joe Matajek of Midland and Robert Matajek of Dallas, two grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and one niece. A private memorial service will be held at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Dallas. Mary Eloise Carter. Mary Eloise Carter was called home by her Savior on October 1st. Eloise Carter was born November 26, 1931, in Childress, Texas, to Hazel and Clennon Williams. Eloise was preceded in death by her husband of 58 years, Jimmy Carter, her brother Dan Williams, and sister Janice Bell. She is survived by her sister, Barbara Berth of Heber Springs, Arkansas, sister-in-law Dorothy Carter of Big Spring, daughter Diane Moore, son Steve Carter and son Tim Carter and wife Laura, all of Midland. Also surviving Mary Eloise are her 5 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren, as well as many nieces and nephews. If preferred, in lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Patricia Irene Ross, 4/14/1998 to 9/19/2021. Patricia went to be with the Lord on the morning of Sunday, September 19th. She was preceded in death by her stepfather, Eddie Donald, grandparents, Patricia and Mary Hibbs, John and Hilda Ross, and Alan and Carol Donald. Patricia is survived by mother, Kelly Donald, father, Don Ross, fiance, Jose Hernandez, sister, Hope Hibbs, as well as many nieces and nephews and cousins. Her legacy of hope, kindness, and unconditional love will be celebrated on October 7th at 6 p.m. at the Big White Barn in Decatur, with memorial to begin at 6:30 p.m. Please join us in celebrating her life and her beautiful soul. Treve Monique Jackson. Treve Monique Jackson, 28, born June 1st, 1993, and taken from us September 27th, 2021. Treve was born and raised in Midland and attended Midland High School. She is survived by her mother, LaShonda Jackson, in Midland, and a host of brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, and aunts and uncles. The viewing will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel Thursday and Friday, October 7th and 8th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Her funeral will be at Greater Ideal Baptist Church at 11 a.m. The family would like to express their gratitude toward Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, as well as friends and family. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for October 6, 2021. Headlines say, City Ready to Put Squeeze on Game Rooms, by Frederico Martinez. The Odessa City Council is betting new measures they plan to adopt next week will make it more difficult for game room operators to stay in business and discourage others from setting up shop in the city. Council members during their Tuesday work session eagerly embraced several proposed ordinance amendments that will severely limit when and where game rooms can operate. Mayor Javier Hoven said council will vote on the amendments during their October 12th meeting. We've all received multiple calls about game rooms, Hoven said on Tuesday. It's my opinion that if somebody wants to blow their Social Security check at one of these places, it's their right. But Hoven added, many of the 23 game rooms currently operating in Odessa are running illegal operations by paying customers cash prizes and are hotbeds for illegal drugs and other criminal activities. Everyone knows the reason why they are proliferating, Hoven said. Under the proposed amendment, city ordinance game rooms can be prohibited from being located within 1,000 feet of another gaming establishment, church, educational institution, healthcare facilities, public building, or the boundary line of a residential zoning district. Planning Director Randy Brinley explained to council. That proposal may have to be changed to 300 feet, which is state law, cautioned City Attorney Natasha Brooks, who said she will have an answer by the time council votes next week. A location exemption will be granted to any gaming operations that can offer proof that the business has operated at the same site and under the same name and ownership prior to December 1, 2021, Brinley said. Police Chief Michael Girk said the proposed amendments will close several loopholes that several local game room operators have been using to thwart the police. Girk noted that police have shut down several game rooms in recent years, only to see them reopen under another person's name a few days later. The proposed ordinance amendment also will only allow new game rooms to open up in areas already zoned light industrial and heavy industrial districts. The businesses will also be required to have 30 paved parking spaces plus one space for every 100 square feet of floor area over 2,000 square feet. Game room hours of operation would be limited to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to midnight Friday through Sunday, Brinley said. COVID numbers drop at Odessa hospitals by Laura Dennis. The news is good, but the advice is cautious. Hospitalization related to COVID are down at both Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center, but health officials were clear during Tuesday's Zoom news conference that social distancing, mask, and other precautions need to continue to protect against the virus. ORMC Chief of Staff Dr. Rohit Saravana said the most recent Delta variant surge in Odessa is hopefully on the way out. He added that there are other variants out there, but we hope the new variants will be susceptible to the vaccines. He said health officials are tracking variants, but reminded that staying on top of risk can make all the difference as the holidays are just around the corner. He recommended being careful with gatherings and making sure that those who gather to celebrate are practicing social distancing and have been vaccinated, and that hand washing remains important. Of the lower numbers, Saravana said, we see it ebb and flow. This is our third surge. We peaked and are on our way down. It is not coming down as fast as we would like or expected to, and the main reason is the unvaccinated population. MCH CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has 49 COVID patients on Tuesday, with 19 in critical care and 14 on ventilators. He said the ages range from 31 to 93 and that the majority of patients are from Ector County. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said there were 16 patients, with 7 in ICU and 4 of those were on ventilators. She said about 87% were unvaccinated and that all were from Ector County. Tippin said he believes the Regeron clinic is helping keep the patient load smaller at the hospitals. He said the hospital has a good supply of treatment, not as much as we were getting, but our supply is steady. That treatment requires a positive COVID test and a referral from a physician. MCH Chief Nursing Officer and Chief Experience Officer Christian Timmons said elective surgeries will return in a limited manner on Monday. Those that require an overnight stay, we will expand on a limited basis of bed availability. Sarah Vanna said ORMC has remained at that state and that everything for electives remains tied to bed availability. As the COVID census goes down, we can accommodate more and more elective procedures. Odessa Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Rod Huber via text said more than 1,000 vaccines have been given out at the free site at UTPB and that most have been the Pfizer vaccine. He said 1,569 have been treated at the Regeneron Clinic. Also, free testing is open again at McKinney Park from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. COVID news. Reminders. Need a vaccine? The City of Odessa, University of Texas Permian Basin, and the Ector County Health Department will continue a COVID-19 vaccination clinic Tuesdays to Fridays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the UTPB Soccer Complex parking lot. Drivers are asked to not line up on the Highway 191 frontage road. First and second shots will be offered. Third shots will be available for those who have passed the six-month threshold unless a doctor's note is provided. Information on booster shots is subject to change in accordance with CDC guidelines. The vaccination clinic is open to the public. 500 vaccinations are available each day. No appointment or pre-registration is needed. Both Pfizer and Moderna will be available. Bring a vaccination card. Wait times are expected to increase without a vaccination card, and bring your driver's license. The Regeneron Infusion Center continues on the MCH campus at One Doctor Place, Suite 700, 500 North Washington. Regeneron is two medications, Casirivimab and MDVimab, that make up this particular monoclonal antibody therapy. Monoclonal antibodies are lab-made proteins that mimic the immune system's ability to fight off harmful pathogens such as viruses. This therapy is for patients who have tested positive for COVID-19 and are at risk for hospitalizations. Not only can it help prevent hospitalizations, but it can also ease the symptom of COVID-19 sooner. A provider can make a referral for patients to receive the monoclonal antibody therapy. The provider will need to confirm their patient is a candidate and would benefit from the therapy. Then call 432-640-2022 to make the appointment. There is also an email to send appropriate documentation at covidinfusioncenter@echd.org. The Infusion Center will be open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The therapy is free and the entire process takes about 90 minutes. Interstate 20 widening scheduled. PBMPO acts after states okay by OA News at OAOA.com. Acting on the Texas Transportation Commission's August 31st approval, the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Board has voted unanimously to proceed with a total of $865.8 million in projects that entail the widening of Interstate 20 to 6 lanes over the 15 miles from JBS Parkway south of Odessa to east of South Highway 349 in Midland. Stepping up the first phase of the ambitious I-20 job to be completed within 4 years, the PBMPO also okayed a host of other projects, including widening I-20 by 2030 from JBS Parkway west to Farm to Market Road 1936 and from 349 or the Rankin Highway east to Farm to Market Road 1208. MPO Executive Director Cameron Walker said, "Constructing on interchange at State Highway 191 and Yukon Road and building or reconstructing ramps and converting frontage roads to one-way on all I-20 jobs are also planned." Walker said other work will be realignment of the rail crossing at County Road 1250 and safety improvements on Farm to Market Road 1882 or West County Road on 42nd Street, which is an extension of 191. At the intersection of 52nd and 56th Streets at East Loop 338 and on State Highway 158 at Wadley and Briarwood Avenues in Midland. Quick hits, reception and lecture. The University of Texas Permian Basin has scheduled a reception and lecture with guest lecturer Robert Pinkering at 5:30 p.m. October 7th at the Nancy Fife Cordozier Gallery, UTPB Visual Arts Studios, south of Stonehenge Replica. Knit and Stitch. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Knit and Stitch at 6 p.m. Thursday. All are invited to bring current projects to work on and share techniques and ideas. Admission is free. Concerts. The Hacienda Event Center, 12610 Texas 191 Frontage Road in Midland, has scheduled the following events. Thursday, 311 Ministries, C4K Dinner Benefits featuring Charlie Crockett, The Pecos in the Rooftops, and Noel Olivas and the Benders. Friday, Corinne Leon, El Moro, Los Vendavilas, Los Two de la S.Y. Thomas Ballardo. October 15th, J.J. El Gigante de la Comida. Local and State News Roundup. Traffic signals planned for intersections in Greenwood, Odessa. A project to install two sets of traffic signals, one at an intersection in Odessa and another at an intersection in Greenwood, will be taking place for the next several months, a Texas Department of Transportation press release detailed. Overhead lighting will also reportedly be placed in 10 locations in 5 counties. Most of the overhead lighting work will be done off the road and will have minimal impact on traffic. A reduced speed limit may be in place in work areas. Motorists are asked to obey all warning signs and to slow down in work zones. The project is scheduled to be completed in early 2022. Willis Electric Company of Abilene won the project with a low bid of $1.74 million. In Greenwood, traffic signals will be installed on Farm to Market Road 307 at the intersection of County Road 1090. That work is scheduled to start later this week, the press release stated. In Odessa, traffic signals will reportedly be installed on both service roads of Highway 191 at Billy Hicks Road. That work is scheduled to start later this month. Lane closures will be kept to a minimum and will be relatively short in duration when they are in place, the press release stated. It is difficult to predict an exact schedule since work will be going on in several locations at the same time. Follow at TXDOT Odessa on Twitter for updates. People can also subscribe to the district's email traffic alerts by emailing Gene Powell at gene.powell@tx.gov. Locations to get overhead lighting improvements include Midland County, 3 locations, Business Interstate 20 at County Road 1310, Farm to Market Road 307 at County Road 1050, and Farm to Market Road 1379 at County Road 120. Ector County, 3 locations, Highway 385 at Mescalero Drive, Highway 385 at Calcutta Street, and Farm to Market Road 2020. Andrews County, 2 locations, Highway 385 at County Road 8000 and Highway 115 at Loop 1910 on west side of the Andrews. Obituaries. Adam Matthew Sanchez, Odessa. Adam Matthew Sanchez, age 28, passed from this life on Monday, September 27th at Odessa Regional Hospital in Odessa. Adams was born Tuesday, January 26, 1993, in Odessa, Texas, to Luis and Gabrielle Sanchez. Adam is preceded in death by his mother, Gabrielle Sanchez, paternal grandparents, Faye and Luis Sanchez, Sr., Uncle Saul Gabrera, and twin nieces, Elena and Arielin Garcia. Those left to cherish his memory are his father, Luis Sanchez, maternal grandparents, Rosara and Emilio Morales, brother Alex Sanchez and wife Sandria, sister Ashley Garcia and husband Ruben, companion dogs Davy, Buster, 2 nieces, 2 nephews, and several aunts, uncles, and cousins. Visitation will be held at Acres West Funeral Chapel Thursday, October 7th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Funeral services will be held Friday, October 8th at 10 a.m. at Parker Heights Christian Church in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Benjamin Robert Carrasco, Odessa. Benjamin Robert Carrasco, 66, of Odessa, was called home on September 27th. Visitation will be Thursday, October 7th, beginning at 5 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Rosary will begin at 6 p.m. Celebration Mass will be held at Holy Redeemer Church with family friend Father Timothy Hayter officiating on Friday, October 8th at 1 p.m. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Peaceful Gardens. Benjamin was born in Pecos, Texas, to Robert and Cindy Carrasco on September 9, 1955. Benji is preceded in death by his beloved oldest sister, Dolores Carrasco. Benjamin is survived by his parents, Robert and Cindy Carrasco, sister Doris Carrasco, Biddy, son Brian Carrasco, daughters Jennifer Estrada, Jessica Guava, and Brandy Carrasco Newton, as well as 8 grandchildren. Dolores D. Poole Weinberger. Dolores D. Poole Weinberger, Dallas. Dolores, or Dee as she was often called, died peacefully in her sleep at her home in Dallas of natural causes. Preceded in death by husband Robert Weinberger, son David L. Gibson, and daughter Mary Ann Murphy Kilpatrick. Survived by daughter Alice Murphy Brown and son Ralph Edwin Murphy. 6 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Funeral services will be held at 12 p.m. Friday, October 8th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the historic White Poole House Museum located in Odessa, Texas, under her name. To send family condolences to the family, please sign our guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Billy Joe Morris, Grapevine. Billy Joe Morris went to be with the Lord on Saturday, October 2nd, in Grapevine, Texas, surrounded by his loving family. Billy Joe was born to Merle Martin and Dorothy Dale Kirby Morris on March 15, 1935, in Juan, Oklahoma. Billy is survived by his 3 sons and their spouses, Larry and Susan of Grapevine, Gary and Melissa of Carlton, and Barry and Tom of Midland. 6 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Friday, October 8th from 5 to 9 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 9th at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home with interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Memorials may be made to First Methodist Church, Grapevine, Texas, Weekend Food. Death Notices. Danny Bull, Odessa. Danny Bull, 58, of Odessa, died Thursday, September 30th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. October 7th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Virginia Irene Enfield Thomas, Odessa. Virginia Irene Enfield Thomas, 84, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 29th, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. October 8th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens of Odessa. Sammy Joe Chavez, Odessa. Sammy Joe Chavez, 63, of Odessa, died Tuesday, September 28th, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Louis Dwayne Felkins, Odessa. Louis Dwayne Felkins, 61, of Odessa, died Friday, October 1st, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. October 7th, 2021 at Connection Christian Church. Don Weeks is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home of Midland. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. COVID-19 transmission by mosquitoes? Dear Dr. Roach, can COVID-19 be transmitted by mosquitoes? My wife is constantly being bit by them in the morning and evening, and this has become a concern of hers. Answer: There has been no evidence of mosquito transmission of COVID-19, and it is very unlikely to do so. Some viruses can be transmitted by mosquitoes, but COVID-19 is typically transmitted by respiratory droplets. If an infected person coughs or sneezes, a nearby person can inhale the virus. A side note about wearing a face mask. Masks help in two ways. If a person who is infected and may not know it is wearing a mask, they will spread far less virus through breathing, coughing, or sneezing. That's why it is also important not to take your mask off to cough or sneeze, even though it's uncomfortable and against instinct. Any mask can reduce the risk of spreading COVID-19. Secondly, wearing a mask filters out the large respiratory particles that are most likely to transmit infection. N95 or KN95 masks are most effective at doing this, but a cloth mask with a surgical mask on top is also effective.
This is the Dear Abby column. Daughter's relationship choices disappoint mom. Dear Abby, I have a 23-year-old daughter, Julia, who I am close with. She has been in a relationship with Joey, a guy her age, for 4 years and living with him for the last 16 months. Joey's a great kid who hasn't had a lot of support in his life. I have been like a mother to him and we are very close. He works hard, earned a college degree, and plans on a career in law enforcement. I love him like my own. The issue is, Julia has been working a part-time evening job. She works with a man I'll call Nick, who is 10 years older and has a child. She has started having an affair with him. She claims to love Joey, but is torn because she's bored and wants to have fun. I am upset and devastated. From the sound of him, Nick doesn't have many great qualities. I believe she's making a grave mistake and risks losing a great future. I have tried getting her to see it, but I don't think I'm getting through. Should I continue or back off and see what happens? I feel like I am betraying Joey because I know about this. Signed, Torn Apart Mom. Dear Mom, as much as you might wish to, you cannot live Julia's life for her. From your description of your daughter, she's not ready for marriage or even a permanent commitment. Joey may be the catch of a lifetime, but if she can't appreciate him and the life he has to offer, he isn't the man for her. Step back and allow her to make her own mistakes, because that's how people learn. And when the truth comes out, tell Joey how sorry you are that things turned out the way they did and that you will always love him like a son. Dear Abby, I'm a 50-year-old woman, and this is the second time my dad has mentioned that he and mom thought about aborting me before I was born. He qualifies this statement by exclaiming, "I just called to let you know I'm so glad your mother and I didn't go through with the abortion, and how happy I am that you are here." The thing is, until he said it, I never knew it had crossed their minds. He knew his statement upset me, yet he brought it up again tonight in a phone call with even more disturbing information, that they had even gone to a doctor to get it done. He uses subtle ways to sneak the new information in, even though he knows it's hurtful. What is his motive? What does he want? Why does he do this? Signed, Perplexed in Alabama. Dear Perplexed, saying something one knows is harmful is cruel. If you haven't discussed this bizarre scenario with your mother, you should. Could dear old dad be losing it? Is he seeking gratitude from you? Was he drunk when he made the call? His behavior is so far from normal, I can't imagine why he would say such a thing twice. Because he may be trying to get a rise out of you, consider deflecting with humor or sarcasm, or simply hanging up. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.